And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney, here to talk some Cubs. We got some game stuff to get into, some schedule stuff to get into, some, you know, all of that good stuff that you want to get into in late August and early September that have to do with, like, the importance of every day's game, watching the standings, all the stuff we've been missing for years. But we have to start with kind of the newsiest bit since our last episode, which is that the Cubs are going to be definitively without Marcus Stroman for many weeks, potentially the season. It's this mysterious ribcage injury that has been revealed to be a fracture of the cartilage in his right ribcage, not an injury that I was familiar with on the baseball side of things. I think we did talk in the last podcast just sort of generally how it was not something you could quickly research and say when he's going to be back. But we got, since then, a little bit of an update straight from the man himself. And I thought that was at least additionally useful context for the injury, although still wrapped in quite a bit of mystery. And just sort of the how it played out was interesting. And so that's where I might punt to you guys on the beat side, because you had a little bit more of a direct exposure to it than I did. So why don't you share with folks what we've learned?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the more bizarre things I've been a part of since covering this team or covering baseball in Chicago. I can't remember, like, very rarely do you see current players up in the press box area, like, at any time, whether it's before the game, after the game. It's kind of like, I remember a player coming up once just because they wanted to kind of explore Wrigley Field, and that was, you know, 4 hours before the game or something like that. Kevin Gregg once came up to apologize after he had some really some quotes that he was upset about not being used as a closer anymore, and had to come up and apologize.
I remember that. He had to do the walk of shame. They called it. That was post game, because there was something lost in translation about, like, Strope, I think, got a save opportunity, but this was like, you know, him just trashing the front office, and then Theo being made aware of it, and then Kevin Gregg, I believe, had left Wrigley Field and came back in street clothes. And I'm sure the Cubs had elevators at that time, but it wasn't like an elevator all the way up to the Catalina Club, like, at the base there. I'm pretty sure it was kind of walking the ramps back and forth to then apologize for whatever. So that's, unless Ed Hardick has another one that we're missing, that is the only one. That wasn't even in the middle of the game. That's how weird this is. Bring this it back was, to you, Sadev.
This was minutes after Bobby Witt Jr. hits a home run. Maybe as it's happening, Marcus Stroman is coming up the elevator and walking through through Wrigley Field over to us in the press box. We get alerted that this is happening, and we all have to, like, kind of scramble and rush over to the cafeteria. And, like, what is happening? Are we going to find out how this injury happened? Is he going to announce that he's out for the year? Like, that, it seemed significant, right? Now, all the answers and everything gave us nothing more than we already had, right? It was there were multiple questions about how this happened. We still don't know. Like, he doesn't seem to know. Everybody is perplexed. He talked about how he thought it may be, the doctors thought it may be, the trainers thought it may be appendicitis, a gallbladder issue. The timeline seems to be he's throwing. He fields some grounders like he normally does, sits down and cools down, feels off, feels something in the chest cavity area, in his diaphragm, gets checked out, gets cleared to fly, goes straight to the emergency room in Chicago to rule out the appendicitis and gallbladder, goes to sleep, wakes up, gets an MRI, and everything is revealed. From my understanding, after Sunday's game, the pitchers were kind of told, like, you're going to be going, Assad, you're going Wednesday, Tyon, you're going on normal rest Friday. Drew Smyly knew as early as Monday that he was back in the rotation or to prepare to be back in the rotation. So the Cubs were prepared for this, that this is going to be a longer thing almost immediately at that point. It was just a bizarre scenario. I haven't seen anything like that. I still don't fully understand what happened. It doesn't sound like anybody knows. And that's one of those things where I wonder if we'll ever know how this happened. If there's a story behind it, I don't want to just assume that there's some story behind it, but it's just so odd that it's just not an injury we see in baseball. Obviously, now they just kind of have to move on, but it's just one of these like cubby occurrences of a guy being on the IL for something that just seemed like, okay, he needs a mental reset kind of stuff, and his body's fatigued, so let's get him on there and he'll be back immediately. And everyone assumed he'd be back immediately, and now he's not.
Real quick, just to confirm for listeners who may be having the question, there was no indication when he originally went on the injured list for the hip issue, for which he did receive a cortisone shot. So, like, there was real inflammation there,
right? You know?
But there was no indication at that time that he was feeling any kind of chest discomfort or
nothing.
It was totally unrelated.
There were multiple ways that this was asked and followed up, and anything. Did it happen gradually over time? No. A little unclear as to when he exactly started feeling it, because he didn't mention the infield stuff until it was brought up to him. But he did, he said essentially, like, it felt a little bit something at the end of the bullpen, but he did take infield. No, like, nothing before that. There was no indication, unless I'm forgetting some quote there, Patrick, but there was nothing, right? This happened apparently during the bullpen session, or at least he started feeling it after the bullpen session.
Yeah, it's real easy on social media to kind of make jokes or question things, which is totally unfair. Like, if a player's injured, like, Marcus Stroman wants to pitch so that he can opt out of his contract and get an even bigger contract and pitch in the playoffs, like, period. Like, that is his motivation. And it's, you know, he has a track record of posting up, which he said. And, you know, when you saw him in the press box cafeteria, as disorienting as that was, it was, I think you could feel empathetic when he says, you know, it was alarming. I had trouble breathing. I can't turn. Like, I was in the emergency room, like, all that stuff. You know, it was important to hear his side of the story. And it just took an awfully long time for that to happen, which I think underlines just some of the oddities around his time with the Cubs. When you hear the Cubs say things like, you know, we let Marcus do his own thing, and that has largely been very successful, and that he has produced at a very high level for the Cubs when he's healthy. It's just odd that, granted, there were two off days last week, but it took a long time for him to address this. Like, as media members, we get to the clubhouse as soon as it's open, which could be 3.5 to 3 hours before the game, and we're on the field until, you know, for a 120 game, we're there until about noon. And certainly, if they told us Marcus Stroman was talking, we would get to the interview room ASAP. So it's just kind of a really bizarre, you know, when you're going back into the Kevin Gregg files for, like, player management disputes or misunderstandings, like, it's a weird place, especially when the team on the field is performing really well. And I don't have my notes in front of me, but I think it was like 2:51 p.m. on Friday when a Cubs PR official starts walking through the press box saying Marcus Stroman will be available shortly to answer your questions and talk about this injury. And then I think by like 2:54, Marcus rolls in with a Cubs security official, like who had presumably guided him up through the elevator or through the concourse or whatever. Just a really strange scenario that I think once the scrum broke up, I think everyone knew, like, there's no reason to think this guy's going to pitch again this year unless something surprising happens or something that we're not aware of or there's, like, a new development. Like, the longer this goes, the harder it's going to be to ramp him back up. And I think they have to operate under the assumption, as Sahid have said, that he's not coming back this year.
Yeah, and I think fans would do well to prepare themselves for that strong likelihood. We'll wrap the Stroman conversation here. I just want to note, because I know the way a lot of fans' minds think in these situations with something truly weird, it's an injury we don't see in baseball, et cetera, et cetera. And many do instinctively think, well, there's more to this story. You know, there's more that we're just not hearing. And I think that it was wise of Stroman and whoever maybe helped guide him to that decision that he did come speak to you guys when he did, because it's otherwise that is just going to grow. And especially as a guy who has this contract option decision to make, might hit free agency, might not. I mean, I think he has a strong incentive to get as much information out there as possible, perhaps guard against misperceptions of him being injury prone or that this was an injury that happened that was because he's like aging or, you know, whatever. Yes, understandably, you'd want to guard against that if you're him. But otherwise, you do have a pretty good incentive to get the real information out there to make sure that, you know, you've given media an opportunity to ask you the right questions. And ultimately, you know, although conspiracy theories have this, just for whatever reason, they hold this allure for us as human beings. But more often than not, mundane explanations are the real explanation. And in this situation, it might just be a truly frustrating scenario where something happened somehow and no one knows and might never know how it happened, but it did and it sucks and here's the fallout. And I think that if it were a situation where a weird injury happened in an inexplicable way, this is what it would look like. It would look like a lot of people asking questions and confusion and not knowing. And this is what it would look like. And so that tends to make me think we've probably gotten as much of the story as we're going to get. It's an injury that happened somehow, some way. It sucks. It's mysterious. It's probably mysterious even to him. And that's just where it's got to be. And as fans and as evaluators and writers and stuff, we're just going to have to observe. We're going to have to see if he, because what has to happen is he's got to physically heal. Like his body has to physically heal before he can even pick up a ball and throw it. And then if and when that happens, might be able to have conversations about what a timeline might look like. And otherwise, it's possible that the next significant conversations we have about Marcus Stroman are going to be about that player option for next year at $21 million, which there was a time a few months ago, remember all the talk about the Cubs not extending Marcus Stroman, and it was crazy at that time that to think that Stroman would pick up this option, and now I would say that's probably better than 50-50 shot that he might. So we'll put a pin in that until sometime in October or November.
And I just want to just...
No, the pin is inside. I shoved it in, and I can't take it out. I can't. It's not up to me.
I just want to clarify, just to be sure. I've talked to so many people about this, just to make sure that we're not missing anything. And all any conspiracy theory that you want to throw out there about maybe something happened to him Saturday night, or maybe this actually happened Sunday night, the timeline seems legit. Like, he won't throw his bullpen if something's bothering him. It's just an insane thing to do. And it was reported from everything I know, like, because players knew after the game that you're going to need to pitch at this. So there's no conspiracy as far as maybe it happened off the field or something. All it is, like, it's just a weird thing that happened. I just want to clarify that I'm not suggesting anything conspiracy wise. It's just weird that we have no clue of this. Like, this injury doesn't happen very often in baseball, and suddenly it happened like in a scenario where we just have no clue what happened. It's just an odd thing that happened, and it was compounded by this past week, as Patrick explained and I explained earlier about what happened. Just wanted to make that clear.
Yep. So to the extent that, you know, there will be corners of the internet where theories and speculation abound, just know that as far as we're saying, there doesn't seem to be any reason to be giving any credence to any of that. It's just a crappy baseball injury that happened somehow. And now the Cubs will deal with the fallout of that. And a part of that, of course, is Sahad Evan Mooney mentioned, is that Drew Smyly will re-enter the rotation, sort of officially taking Stroman's spot. You know, if you consider Javier Assad as having already been in the rotation. And we talked on the last podcast, I don't know how much worse for the wear the Cubs will be compared to the last month and a half, you know, like, because they either didn't have Stroman at all or he was pitching quite poorly. So in that respect, not necessarily a huge change, but where the big concern is Stroman could have been quite a bit better than that, and they kind of needed that. And it's a knock on your depth. You know, who's the next man up? If the Cubs need another starting pitcher, if someone else gets hurt, who is that guy? And I think we could throw out names, and we have in our writing, but I think the fact that it's an open question is concerning, because, I don't know, do we really think that all the five guys in the rotation now are going to be perfectly pristine and healthy the rest of the way? Maybe, but that's a big question. So hopefully Ben Brown returns from his injury. Hopefully Jordan Wicks continues to show that he might be an option. But in the meantime, Cubs have the Tigers this week, and we'll start to see the fallout from this. But before they get there, let's wrap the series against the Royals, where the Cubs took 2 of 3. And I do want to say, by the way, they didn't win the first two and then lose on Sunday. As you'll recall, that is the shittiest version of taking 2 of 3. So I want to thank them a great deal for that, because it did make for a considerably more relieving and enjoyable Sunday transition into Monday. And I'll kick it to you, Sahadev, because I think this was your piece where you mentioned this, but the idea that the Royals and the White Sox before them are, you know, bad teams, and therefore you can look at the schedule and say, ah, chalk up this many wins, would be untrue for any team, even the very best of teams. You know, we see these things happen every year, especially in the second half, and the Cubs were this kind of team last year, where they were just playing a lot better than you would think, not necessarily because they were itching to be a spoiler, but because they had personal stakes involved in playing well. And that is going to be the case for a lot of the teams that the Cubs still have on the schedule, and we saw it with the Royals, who, for as much as they were lacking in sort of surefire talent, established talent, it was not hard to see that they've got a lot of nice, young, pesky players who are clawing to perform well.
Yeah, pesky is a good way to describe that offense. They don't strike out. They run the bases well. They're aggressive on the bases. So, like, getting Bobby Witt on base, just if he singles, like, there's a good chance he'll get into second, and then a single scores him, right? And that's exactly what happened to Kyle Hendricks on Sunday. They stole a lot of bases overall this weekend. They're one of the higher batting averages since the All-Star break. Guys like Cole Reagans and Brady Singer have been good since the All-Star break. I mean, you saw it with Cole Reagans. I mean, if you actually watched him pitch, he's got stuff, right? He's got stuff, and he's been pitching well since he was traded to the Royals. There's no doubt that this is the part of the schedule where the Cubs need to take advantage of teams, of, you know, losing teams, right? They need to win these games. They need to win series. But just to assume that it's going to be a cakewalk is a mistake, right? That, like, we fans just can't do that. And, I mean, this Royals team is bad record-wise, right? But you watch them play and you're like, how are they this bad? How do they have this many losses? I mean, they're playing decently well right now. And then there were moments where, you know, on Friday I didn't go to Saturday's game, but Friday and Sunday, where I was just watching and I was like, man, they're stealing hits from the Cubs, or they're really controlling things in the sense that they're not letting this game get out of hand. That on Saturday, what I did watch, they were obnoxious in the late innings, making that a closer game than probably fans were expecting. So I think it's just a reminder that all of this needs to. These are major league teams with the talented players that are going to be a pain in the butt. They can't. It's not acceptable to lose these series, right? Because of where they are in the standings and what they need to do. But it's not. It can't be this like shock if it does. Like these teams are going to be a pain in the butt. I will say Sunday, Kyle Hendricks stepping up is big, right? We just spent so much time talking about Marcus Stroman. Kyle Hendricks needs to be this guy going forward, right? He's had one blow-up outing, and I think that kind of sticks in everyone's memory because every single outing that he has, I know it sticks in mine because every single time he's out there, I'm like, is he just teetering on the edge here of falling apart? I have to remind myself that that's Atlanta. It was really one really bad inning. And even Hendricks himself will say, and others around him have said, you know, there were like maybe two bad pitches and Atlanta pounced on him and the rest was just like taking advantage of finding the holes, which is how you beat Kyle Hendricks, right? Even when he's going well. So I wrote this, it's either six of his last eight or five of his last seven starts or quality starts. The one bad outing in Atlanta and the one that isn't a quality start was like five innings, one run or something like that. So he's doing what he needs to do as far as Marcus Stroman's out. They need a veteran leader kind of stabilizing things, eating innings, making sure the bullpen just doesn't fall apart. I think it was important, even that one out in the seventh inning, get as many outs as you can through the game from the starter. And Hendricks is doing that. I think it's big. He knows there's some little tweaks he needs to make, control the running game, find his curveball, but he's close. He's not that 2020 and 2016 version, but he's not far off, which is huge.
I love David Ross's messaging the last few days whenever he's been asked about like Justin Steele's workload or the bullpen's workload, and he's sort of laughed it off. He's like, well, they have to do it at some point, right? And it's like these guys didn't prepare the entire offseason thinking, well, I'm just going to take the last month of the season off. And I think it's instructive because he's like, you know, we don't have the metrics from like Roy Halladay's first full season, but, you know, we're almost overloaded with information to this point where you can kind of, on the one hand, you can overanalyze things or you can, you know, kind of gain. You can know like where they're slipping or what the real warning signs are. And I think like, I don't think the pitching is going to totally fall out at this point, in part because, you know, for being honest, like Marcus Stroman hasn't been a good pitcher for, you know, several weeks, a couple months, maybe. Like they did this. He certainly put them in the position to hold at the deadline. And then Byers, he was not like a huge part of that, like last push. I think we've seen it over the years, whether it's figuring out the bullpen, whether it's, you know, winning 95 games that year when they got like nothing from Chatwood and Darvish, winning World Series without any homegrown pitchers. You know, Theo never said like our pitching broke. Like they usually like figure it out. I think now it's a question of, to Brett's point, like who can come up and help you? Like, are any of these pitching prospects like legit in this moment? Like, will Tyone have like a huge September that makes everyone forget about like his awful first half? I think Kyle Hendricks will be fine. You know, I don't know. Can Wisniewski be the guy he was last September and the guy they thought they had in spring training? Drew Smyly, you know, Ross keeps saying that, you know, the metrics, the analytics say that, you know, he's better than he's been, that there are these positive signs. Well, here's a chance. We know Drew Smyly didn't want to go to the bullpen, whatever he says, you know, like, and, you know, he's a team guy, whatever, but he wants to start. And it's like, okay, well, here's your chance. And I think, to me, it's, can you kind of turn up certain things and like win those kind of like jump ball games within a series? Because it does look, I mean, Ross is kind of managing this series to series, right? Like, you know, if they get an early lead or they're A and B relievers, you can, you know, kind of put your foot down here to to kind of win a game. And I think that, to me, like, it's not the Cubs did it once this year when they ripped off that 8-game winning streak. It's just not realistic to think like, okay, they're just going to like run the table against these teams. And 3-2 doesn't sound that great, but that's a pretty good winning percentage in the context, larger context of baseball. And if they can just keep picking up series wins, they'll be fine. Because I do think their pitching is better positioned than, say, like the Reds are going down the stretch here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's worth noting, too, that although the Cubs went 3-2 against the White Sox and Royals, I don't think they played particularly well. I mean, I don't think you would have watched those five games and said, they're clicking, things are humming. And so to win 3 of 5, it's not as if that was like pure luck either. I think it was just a reflection of they are more talented than the White Sox and Royals right now. They are a better team. And sometimes even playing poorly, a better team can beat a bad team that's playing well. And that's almost exactly what we saw in this Royals series. It was a bad Royals team playing pretty well against a good Cubs team playing pretty poorly. And the Cubs took 2 of 3. And I'd like to hammer that point home, not just for the rest of this season, because there's only so much the Cubs could do to reformulate their roster here for the rest of the way. But it's a reminder for next season, too. It's don't forget that, you know, for as much as you can talk about optimizing matchups and playing time and roles and what have you, like having more talent on the roster, still better. That's still the way to go. Having a bunch of really good players, still the best way to go. I was reminded of that in concert with the Royals series win playing out as it did, was that the Cubs jettisoned another one of their depth players from this offseason for as great a job, I would say great, really, as the front office has done in building back out the farm system, in incorporating established players, and in not missing on some of the biggest swings. Getting those complementary positional guys, especially, has really been a tall task and has gone quite poorly. We've seen three of them dumped now already this year. Eric Hosmer was low-cost signing and was sort of kind of a placeholder to begin with, I think, was the thinking. So whatever, I can discount that one. But Trey Mancini, he was expected to play a role, and that failed, and they punted. Tucker Barnhart is, of course, the one I'm mentioning now. He was supposed to be sort of the 1B catcher and didn't work out because the bat was even worse than anyone could have feared. And the, you know, ability to carry the pitching staff wasn't there in relation to what Yan Gomes can already do and what Miguel Amaya and his bat can do. So kudos to the Cubs for making the decision this weekend to say, okay, we got to move on. It was a lot like the Trey Mancini decision. You're eating some 2024 money to make the decision that, okay, we really need to go. But we'll bring it back to 2023, but I want to wrap my point, which is just that the Cubs have to keep that in mind for 2024. You got to make the right decisions about the talent of your roster and get the right guys in place, even in those complementary roles, because they can make a difference at the margins. A lot of that you want to develop internally, and I think the Cubs are getting there. But for now, there were a couple misses, and I do appreciate the decision to move on at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I understand some fans want those moves made earlier, and I understand the thought process behind that, but you do kind of have to give veterans a shot, and you also have to make sure you have the depth to cover up the loss of those players. I know fans don't consider it a loss, but it is. Like, they're major league players that if an injury occurs or several injuries occur, you can use those players to help the team. But yeah, I mean, I think like what fans should take away from that, I understand your point and you're right. Like, you gotta, you want better evaluation of these depth moves. And, you know, I think there are some circumstances here that we could give them a pass in a certain way. But I think the most important thing to take away is they're willing to eat that money for next year. I would expect them to, like, this isn't going to hold them back. This isn't like they wouldn't make those moves if it was holding them back. This is going to be an interesting offseason, an aggressive offseason. Like, because of what we're seeing now with the team on the field, the play that we're seeing combined with how good the system is, they're going to be aggressive. Their plan was 24 and 25 are the years that we can turn this into a World Series contender. They're set up to do that now, and they're not going to let things hold them back, whether it's clinging to prospects to avoid some big trade or not spending the extra money to get that player that they feel like is really important piece of the puzzle. It's going to be an aggressive offseason. Obviously, we have a month and a half here that are important, so we don't need to dive into that. I just think it's important. That's what these moves signal to me, that it's pretty clear that they're not going to be held back financially. Like, you don't make those types of moves if you're going to start making financial excuses in a couple months.
That's clearly part of why they didn't add more at the trade deadline, was staying beneath the CBT this year was an important factor, and they certainly weren't going to go slightly over for basically a middle reliever on a 500 team. I do think, I don't know how much of this is fair, because clearly you couldn't count on Miguel Amaya. He was so injury prone over the years, but it does go back to stuff we talked about earlier in the year of like the Cubs' ability to evaluate their internal talent, because they were not talking up Christopher Morel. They did not tell him, you know, make him the focus of learn how to play third base, and you can get some big runway. I do wonder too, like, I give a lot of credit to David Ross for how he kept things together, but there is clearly this, like, he has a catching first kind of philosophy, and he has very specific ideas about how the catcher position should be handled. And that was not Wilson Contreras. We don't need to like relitigate that, but I do think it'd be interesting to see how Amaya is used, how much trust he earns down the stretch here, and kind of what they do with that moving forward. Tucker Barnhart, I'm assuming that 2-year deal was, you know, that player option part was just a CBT maneuver to stay beneath that. I'd like to see less kind of restraint on that end this offseason. And the Mancini one, everyone liked that signing. Like, he's a great dude. You think he bounced back? It is surprising, however, that he got 2 years after how poorly he performed with the Astros. That must have been a good bit of agenting. Because I can't imagine teams were like knocking down his door. He didn't sign until January, but it just goes to show you never know. And the Cubs, hit on the biggest ones in Dansby and Bellinger, and that is why they're in this position right now. I mean, they have had just like two spectacular seasons from their two biggest players at the time they absolutely needed, and that, you know, they've been the game changers this year.
Certainly, if you're going to get some moves wrong in an offseason, you'd much rather it were the depth pieces than the guys that you need to be impacting you. I think we'll just about leave it there. Although, a little side note on letting Barnhart go. I think a very little discussed move that the Cubs made just before the trade deadline actually had an impact there, which was to go back and get old friend PJ Higgins from the Diamondbacks. By bringing him back into the organization, he's a minor league guy, but he knows the system, he knows the pitchers, he knows the coaching staff, probably accorded the front office a little more comfort in saying, okay, if we lose Tucker Barnhart and then something were to happen to Amaya or Gomes, we at least have a guy in place, emergency, who knows, you know, what's going on with the team. And he's also raking at Iowa, just for whatever that's worth. But I think that was, so I mentioned that because I want to give a little bit of a tip of the cap to the foresight of the front office to go do that. They got him for cash. It was like a nothing deal, but it allowed them to more flexibility to do this now. So well done on that part. Cubs get the Tigers this week. Old friend Javi Baez. That'll be nice to see. You wish he was having a better time of it in Detroit than he has, but certainly not in this series. So Cubs will play the Tigers for three with the reformulated rotation, like we said, and Cubs have to continue to take these teams very seriously because they won't always be able to eke out close wins against bad teams. So you'd like to see them maybe pull out a thumping or two, give some of those high leverage relievers a day off. All right. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. We will be back at you later this week after the Tiger series. And we appreciate you and hope you have a great week. Take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.